I can't definitively say whether Macho Man can or cannot talk to cows. All I know is that it would explain a lot as to how he became the cream of the crop.
Oh, yeah.
Are you ready? If you're not down with that,
welcome everybody to the Two Words Podcast. My name is John, and with me, as always, the face that runs the place, Radio Matt.
Yo.
How you doing today, man?
Dude, I am living my best life now.
Get a little Osteen it up today, huh?
Yeah.
We're the best.
Every day's a Friday.
It's the best life now. Unfortunately, it still ain't that good. Well, we got a fun show today because today our two words are group project, because we're talking about factions.
I thought you went with a different two words for this.
I did, and then I chose.
Okay, so group project.
Group project.
Okay, go with that.
Tentatively, it was best friends. Yeah, I'm like, I don't like that. That's weird. But now you all know behind the scenes.
It just took me aback. I'm like, hold on, is this still the same topic? Am I a week ahead?
Oh, no.
I'm very unprepared.
That sounds exactly like something I would do. To you. But we're going to be talking about factions, why we love them, why we hate them, and who has too many of them. But first, hey, yo, Matt, did you know that Kevin Owens doesn't eat pie?
I do not. What a story to start with.
Revealed on the, what was the name of the podcast? The Out of Character podcast with Ryan Satin. Satin, I think, would be the name.
Thanks, Satan.
He revealed that he doesn't eat pie. He's never eaten pie. His parents didn't really keep it around the house, and
so he's just never had pie.
And they asked him. They're like, "You didn't even eat the pie that was thrown at your face?" He goes, "No, I just wiped it off." He goes, "At this point," he goes, "when people ask me like, 'Hey, you want some pie?' I'm just like, 'No, I don't.
No,
I don't
interest.
Want any pie.'" And he said, "Now after this interview, I will specifically not be eating pie because I don't want to." And so I thought that was very interesting. The Canadian no pie eater.
Wow. Hey, apparently there's a reason it took so long for RVD to be added to the Hall of Fame.
Why is that?
Because Vince thought he was already in it. Michael Hayes said they were having a meeting about, I think it was either 2020 or 2021, but they were the two that kind of got smushed together.
Yeah.
But they were having one of those meetings, and Vince said something along the lines of, "It's too bad RVD's already in the Hall of Fame. He'd be a good addition this year." And Michael Hayes said, "RVD's not in the Hall of Fame." And that's why they called him that year.
Yeah, pretty sure he is, isn't he?
And that made Rob Van Dam feel pretty darn good. And he's like, "Oh, okay, all this time I thought they just didn't like me.
They just didn't like me." That's great. That just really proves, like, Vince McMahon makes up things in his head just goes with them. Which I can't say I don't do the same thing, but it's just, are you going to listen to The Undertaker's new podcast when it comes out?
Oh, he's got a new podcast?
He's going to have a new, I think WWE is producing it. It's like going to be like another Broken Skull.
Another kind of deep interview type
kind
thing. Heck yes, I will.
Yeah, I'm very excited for what that might look like.
Yeah.
You know?
Tony Khan is claiming that much of the anti-AEW community aren't real, but are actually an army of bot accounts, saying that this would be a wildly expensive undertaking and heavily implying that WWE is doing it without directly saying it, and doubled down on it. He's doubled down on it yesterday. So he says he has independent researchers that know, you know, a lot more than he does, saying that there's like a group of people who are making, you know, anti-AEW claims, and then a flood army of bots to retweet and spread the message, just like all the elections we've had recently.
Yeah, apparently. I was about to say, like, That is the most Trumpian thing I've ever heard. And I've heard a lot of Trumpian things, but that's just the most, like, no, people love my show. My show is great. It's all fake.
Vince McMahon is in bed with the Russians. Good kids, Vladimir Putin, right in the mouth.
Yeah, these are the same bots that stole the election. We're going to investigate it. We're going to be back another 8 years.
Greatest 16-year presidency in history.
Hey, yo, do you think that Pat McAfee is still going to have a job after calling Butch the Rabid Wolverine on live television?
Explain to me why that's bad.
Because that was Chris Benoit's nickname.
Oh, it was. Okay, I know it sounded wrong.
Butch the Rabid Wolverine! And immediately everybody went, oh, no!
Wow, I forgot that was even his nickname.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Also,
probably a bad idea.
Also, can he not be Butch? Can he just go back to Pete Dune? We all knew him as Pete Dune.
I don't know. I'm kind of liking the Butch.
Butch.
I kind of like the Butch name. And I like his character. I don't know. I'm not sure I'm supposed to like his character, but I do.
I think you're supposed to hate everything that Sheamus does.
Yeah, they're not going to fire Pat McAfee for that, I don't think.
No. He's not going to apologize either. He's not going to care.
He's
not
too much of a draw right now.
Nah.
Hey, yo, Stephen Austin. Stephen, the coldest of stones, Austin, has flat out said that if they want him back for WrestleMania 39, he's in. So,
of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
I mean, I'd like to see more of it.
Money.
This was not an Undertaker sad decline situation from a few years ago where we're like, just end it, please.
Please, this was like,
holy cow, he can still go. Let's go.
We're putting more shotgun rounds into him. Make it end! Why won't you die? hey, yo, I have some goodbyes to say.
Ooh.
First I would like to, and maybe you can give me like a ring bell after all these, but,
oh, hold on. I don't have a ding sound.
Oh, you don't.
I'll put it in post edit.
Here we go. Post edit. First I would like to say goodbye to the tag team of Rhea Ripley and Liv Morgan. I barely knew that you existed and now you've broken up.
Ding.
I would like to say goodbye to the Cody Vader. You were a really dope entrance, but I guess you weren't cost effective. I'm not really entirely certain why you couldn't use everybody else's elevator. Like, you had to roll out your own elevator. I'm not using Edge's roller elevator. No, that's a chump's elevator. Put a giant elevator. It's a weird elevator right in the middle of the stage. So goodbye to the Cody Vader. And finally, goodbye to Austin Theory's first name. Austin Theory recently just got one named. Usually it's last named, but this time they took his first name and now he's just Theory.
Yeah. Wait. Ding.
Yeah.
At least they like... At least it wasn't just like a sudden thing like most of these are.
Yeah.
I could just come out and suddenly I'm just Riddle.
Yeah.
It's like, he's like, you know what? Just call me Theory. And then whatever bullcrap reason he had for it. But I mean, at least they kind of explained it happening.
And one last goodbye. Sorry, I forgot. Goodbye to that random dude's house who thought that he was helping Liv Morgan with her money issues. And so he sold his house and it wasn't really Liv Morgan.
Oh, dang.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. Apparently a guy was contacted over the internet by Liv Morgan over like Instagram or Facebook or something talking about her money issues, and he sold his house to help her with her money problems, and now he has no home and Liv Morgan doesn't have that money.
Too bad. Too big of a fan.
But and people on the internet are really jerks, like, because there are a lot of people out there like, oh, if you're that dumb, you deserve to lose your house. Like, nobody deserves to lose their home.
Nah, yeah.
Like, deserved homelessness is really just an awful idea. And also, there are a lot of people out there saying that this guy is trying to scam Liv Morgan into giving him money, but being like, I sold my house thinking it was you, darling.
Is that how he talks?
I don't know. I assume
it's got to be.
It's got to be. Oh. It's got to be like that Alabama Louisiana line right there.
Hey, yo. Not necessarily news, but I just got to ink this in, the Ezekiel storyline continues with him passing a lie detector on Raw that Kevin Owens and Chad Gable put him through. And my dreams for this storyline are coming true.
Oh my God.
Each and every week. I look forward to an Ezekiel versus KO match, possibly as soon as Backlash. But I'm loving it. They're doing exactly what I thought they were going to do after that first segment.
And he did Pat McAfee's show.
Did he?
As Ezekiel.
Oh, I got to go catch that. Okay.
And was like, you know, when you see me wrestle, it's going to be great. Because, you know, my brother, he does great wrestling, and it's going to be awesome. And it's doubling down on things like that. That's fantastic. Lastly for me, hey, yo, Dana Brooke apologizes for the wedding. But not in the way you think she would apologize. But more like, I'm sorry it wasn't more wedding.
It wasn't, you know, this is the first like wedding storyline that I remember that wasn't the last thing of the show.
Yeah.
You know, because normally that's, so it was like stuck in the middle, and because it wasn't the last thing, it didn't feel as big of an issue.
Yeah.
But of course it also wasn't, because these are all very low card characters all fighting over the 24/7 championship.
Yeah,
but
I approached you on Sunday and was like, did you know that Dana Brooke's the 24/7 champion?
Yeah, so I was
unaware of that.
I mean, it's entertaining enough for me.
I had such high hopes for Dana Brooke. I really did.
Yeah, it doesn't look like that's
she comes
go
out
hard.
And does that flip, that really cool flip, where it's like, because the top half of her body is so much broader than the bottom half, it's just kind of like flipping a hammer.
Yeah.
And she kind of shoots her legs around the other side. It's really dope to look at. So,
all right, lastly for me, heyo, QT Marshall explained that nerd culture has really overtaken wrestling. He said in an interview on Desert Island Graps podcast, it's a lot harder to get the bigger type of people to come into wrestling now. Cody Rhodes taught me this. The culture's changed. It's more nerd culture that has kind of taken over professional wrestling. The other day at TV, Nyla Rose was dressed up, and I said, what is that paint? And she said, oh, I'm Venom. And I remember joking with her about it, like, why would you choose one of the biggest matches of your career to dress up like somebody else? And then I realized, like, okay, there's action figures out of it. There's other reasons. I remember when I first started, we were taught, hey, pick five of your favorite wrestlers and take a little bit from each of them. And that's kind of how you shape who you're going to be. Nowadays, everyone I ask says, hey, what's your character? What are you thinking? It's always some kind of anime or DC or Marvel character. And I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
I don't.
Big quote.
I'm old.
But I think that is definitely true, because you think about, I mean, I think New Day have made it more apparent with how every one of their costumes is now inspired by another geeky culture moment. But like, we had Vega come out as Vega that one time. You know, we've had these little bits and pieces of nerd culture influencing costume designs and characters, and I think it's true. I mean, that's why Love Thy Nerd wanted a wrestling podcast.
Yeah,
it's not necessarily considered a nerdy thing on the offset, but it really is permeating the culture.
I believe I said that in one of our early episodes. Like, we are the nerds of the nerd culture. Like, we are the ones that are still ashamed around other nerds that we like what we like. Everybody else, like, oh, I spent 6 hours on Pokemon Go yesterday, or, you know, I've watched every episode of One Piece, which I hear is impossible. But we're like wrestling.
In the Love Thy Nerd Discord, we used to have a separate channel for sports people discussion and wrestling discussion, and they only recently joined them together into one group. Like, first acknowledging that wrestling is, you know, a kind of a sport, even if it's, you know, scripted, it's still a sport. But now we're in there where every other conversation is an actual football game and what happened at WrestleMania. And you can tell these are two very different kinds of people.
Very different groups.
Not a lot of overlap.
Yeah.
Which is funny.
That's great. Well, that's it for us in our Hey Yo segment. When we come back, we're taking a trip to Make-Believe Land, so stick with us.
Hey.
This week in nerdy news, this is LTNN. It's all about branding, and Amazon is banking on itself, which of course has been a pretty successful tactic over the years. Amazon purchased IMDb way back in 1998, and in 2019, Amazon branded their new free but ad-supported streaming service IMDb Free Drive, later renaming it IMDb TV. However, it has lived in relative obscurity, only finding itself on people's radar when their search on Prime Video came up with a show only available on the free service. Amazon appears to believe that IMDb TV is lacking in two things. One, people don't realize it's part of the Amazon set of products, and two, people don't know that it's completely free. And so, to that end, they're renaming the service to Amazon Freevee by the end of the month. And while you can watch classics like Mad Men, Lost, The Princess Bride, Office Space, Corner Gas, and a lot more on that channel, they have also created several originals, such as Leverage Redemption and Judy Justice. Freevee is planning to increase its slate of originals by 70% this year. Let's hope it also increases its advertisers, because binge-watching a show with the same dozen commercials in rotation every break gets old quick in the current service. More new Freevee originals will be announced in the company's New Fronts presentation on May 2nd. That was This Week in Nerdy News. I'm Radio Matt, and this is LTNN.
Welcome back to the Two Words Podcast, where today our two words are group project, and we are talking about factions. Now, one of probably our favorite factions, one of everybody's favorite factions, you never hear anything bad about them, is Evolution. Mm-hmm. Evolution being Ric Flair, Triple H, Randy Orton, and Batista, a young Randy Orton and a young Batista.
Yeah.
And it really changed at the time. It really kind of set a tone for groups at the time.
Yeah. It was kind of post the faction era in WWE for a while. There was a good chunk of time where we didn't really have any big name factions going on. And then Evolution happened.
Yeah. And with Evolution, I think what made Evolution really really great, and we can talk about this a little bit later too, but everybody had a purpose in what they were, and so you had the old timer in Ric Flair, who could kind of be there to watch over everybody and kind of nudge people in certain ways. You had
semi-manager role.
Yeah, you had Triple H, who was your veteran. He was active. He was the general of this group. You had your heavy in Batista, who could just kind of run up and start mugging people. And then you had your rising star in Randy Orton. Yeah. And all of those guys, I mean, obviously, they're all Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
Or future Hall of Famer in Randy Orton's case, but the minute he stops wrestling, they're giving him a ring.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, they may have an extra Hall of Fame ceremony just so they can do it, like, right away. So I thought it would be fun if we kind of tried to bring an Evolution back, not in the way they tried to bring Evolution back a few years ago at WrestleMania 30, or right before WrestleMania 30, when Batista and Randy Orton and Triple H
forgot about that, yeah,
kind of feuded with the Shield.
Yeah.
That's when we got Blue Tista.
Yeah,
and wore that bright blue ring gear. And so Matt and I have each put together our own imaginary stable.
Yeah.
This is cross promotional.
This is dreamland.
And so first, I guess I'll go first.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah,
I'll go first. My old timer, I'm going to go with Bully Ray. I think that Bully Ray is smart. Ooh. I think that he can talk just as well as anybody else. And I think with the list of guys that I have, he will kind of be able to steer things in a certain way. I'm definitely going for less of like suits and private jets and more like motorcycles and Metallica t-shirts.
Okay.
Kind of thing. Who is your old timer?
Oh, okay. We're going to do that.
We'll do it this way.
Okay. So you might think my ideas are cheating a little bit, but my old timer is Triple H.
Okay.
Okay, so moving
I had
him
a really hard time moving away from Triple
moving
H.
Moving him from the veteran to the old timer role, I think he'd be a fantastic like semi manager. It's a of course he's retired from wrestling, which is a bummer because Ric Flair was still wrestling at the time.
Yeah,
but if we left that out of it, he has been a leader of a faction so many times, and all of those factions have been like successful, popular factions.
Yeah,
that I believe his presence brings with it an air of invincibility, and so.
Yeah,
that's why.
No, that's it's hard to see that type of like this type of faction come together mm-hmm. without putting Triple H, like, because honestly, you could just make it the old Evolution plus one young dude.
True.
Like,
true.
You could move Randy Orton up into the veteran spot. You could keep Batista in the heavy spot. Like, it's all there. So my veteran, or my kind of aged veteran would be Kenny Omega.
Okay.
I think that he has a watchability that is unlike anybody else in the business right now. I think that for the last, 6 or 7 years, his name has popped up all over the place, even before AEW.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
You know, he was the 5-star match guy. And now he's kind of taking on more, you know, character roles and that sort of stuff. And I think that the combo of like Bully Ray and Kenny Omega could be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Okay. So I did initially put Orton in my in my veteran spot because he is 20. I mean, he's been in the business 20 years now. He is really filled into that role. But I'm going to switch to my second choice, which is actually Seth Rollins. Now, Seth Rollins hasn't been around as long. He's been around, but he's been in the WWE for 10 years now. Did you realize that?
Yeah.
It's been 10 years.
Yeah.
So I'm putting Seth Rollins in there. I want him to, I mean, I don't want him to because I like his character now, but to be in this role, he would have to drop his weird suit and weird mannerism gimmick that he's doing lately.
Oh yeah.
And go back to the kind of character he was when Triple H was building him up.
The curb stomping,
title stealing, Seth Rollins. But I really think he has that ability to be the next Triple H when that time comes. So that's who I'm sticking with.
Okay. So moving on to our heavy, the muscle of the group, the guy that can just walk in, and when he walks in, he's like the kind of guy. I'm going with Will Hobbs from AEW.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't even think about
that. Like,
Hobbs.
You just look at that guy and he is darker Batista. I mean, that's really what it is. He's just muscles on muscles. He's strong. He's powerful. He's fast, and he's young, so he still kind of has some growth. And putting him with some older guys, and putting him in a kind of a group where he doesn't have to carry the load of everything. Yeah. I really like Will Hobbs, and he has been wrestling. I mean, the hard part is finding guys who haven't been wrestling for 15 years up to this point.
Right.
I mean, it really is hard. Even guys you really haven't heard of, it's like, you've been wrestling for a really long time.
Yeah.
So Will Hobbs is kind of my guy on that one.
All right. For mine, I picked Bron Breakker. For many of the same reasons. It's good that he's young. He doesn't really have to have the leadership aspect. He's bigger. He can just come in and wreck house, destroy everything, and be the intimidating muscle. He's still young enough in the WWE sphere, anyway, the NXT sphere, to be molded into something more intimidating. And I mean, like, he's kind of intimidating, but he's also kind of goofy.
Yeah.
The way his character is now. I think if they tightened up that intimidating aspect of it, it would be good.
He's like both versions of the Steiners.
Yeah.
Which, for obvious reasons.
Ooh, yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
But yeah, that's who I picked for heavy.
And my rising star would be Will Ospreay from New Japan. Not a lot of people know Will. He is a young guy. He's in his 20s. But he's another one of those guys that if you get too much further than WWE or AEW in wrestling, like, you hear this name a lot.
Yeah.
I would want him to, he does a lot of acrobatics for his look, because he still has like a Randy Orton look.
Yeah.
But he does a lot of like flips and different stuff like that. I would probably get him to do a little less of that sort of stuff, and just kind of a little more straightforward. But I think he's great. I really actually wanted to put LA Knight in this until I realized that LA Knight is almost 40. Like, LA Knight, you don't realize, has wrestled for every major promotion.
Yeah.
Except for AEW. Like, he was in Impact, and he was in NWA, and he was in WWE before, and he wrestled in ECW, I think, for a little bit. Like, that's crazy. So, and like, how are you kind of booking your...
Well, I haven't given you my other guy.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. You're a fourth guy. You can't have a four-man faction with three dudes. Yeah, so. Who's your rising star?
So, I mean, I'm not... This might have been a little bit of a fudge as well, because I'm not sure if people would consider him a rising star given his position in AEW. But I think if you brought him over now to WWE, he would have to climb that way back up. And that character is MJF.
Yeah, he's 24. I consider him a rising star.
Yeah, but I mean, he just... Because he's in the title picture... Over at AEW, he already feels like an established guy. But I feel like he is currently in the mode that he's in right now, with the very snarky and sarcastic and entitled kind of, you know, I'm better than you mode is great to start with. I think putting that in this kind of stable position to where... We can take his sinister level up a little bit more.
Yeah.
Like, turn him into, just like Orton did, you know, make him just a touch evil, you know, just that little hint of evil in the background, to where he's not only a, you know, bullheaded, snarky, cocky guy, but when he needs to be, he can be a absolute monster.
Yeah.
Just a sinister, you know, poke your eye out with a, you know,
finger.
Hammer or whatever, whatever tool,
whatever you
use.
Poke eyes
what
out.
What
with.
Do we get? What do we get Rey Mysterio's eye out with? I don't remember. Remember hanging out
the steps?
Was that what it was? How did the eye hang out then?
There's I don't think it did it.
Oh yeah, they had like a whole thing where it was this very, very quick shot from a camera far away where you see like this little eyeball hanging out of his socket.
That was such a terrible idea.
The horror show at Extreme Rules.
I hated that. I hated that so much. So how are you kind of booking your guys? How are you putting? How are you bringing your team together? And what are they going to do?
I mean, bringing them together is hard to book other than, because you know, you don't always see factions build up that quickly. It's sometimes just like, hey, we're a faction now.
Yeah.
But I think the best way to be doing this is kind of the reverse of what they did with Evolution. With Evolution, they, you know, built them all together as like they had this chemistry, you know, on screen, and then they started taking all the titles. I think what would be great is having all four of these characters win a title individually, separately from everybody else, and then reveal they've been working together the whole time and have them all come out as champions. Ooh. And set up this immediate dominance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that. I would think, like, for this, I just have the kind of this image in my head of, like, Will Ospreay, and he's, you know, this is, and you got to play the long con with some of this stuff. Everybody knows my affinity for, long form storytelling, you know, having Will Ospreay come in and he's like the next big thing, you know, which they always call everybody the next big thing or whatever. But, and he has some luck. He has some good things. And then everything's just, it's downhill for like 2 months. He's just losing and losing. And he's a jobber to the point where when he comes out, you know, he's just jobbing for somebody.
They stop playing his music.
Yeah. He's in the ring when the commercial break is over. They're not even saying his full name. They're just like, Will's over here. That guy.
His opponent. Will.
And and you know, he has one match and it goes downhill for him. He loses again. The winner gets out of the ring and Will is just in the ring and he is distraught and he has no idea what to do. And then, you know, he's walking backstage and he's got his, he's hanging his head low. And then he just kind of like, he bumps into Bully Ray and Kenny Omega. And they both just kind of look at him and they look at each other and then they look back and he's like, yeah, he'll do. And then like the next week, the four of them come out, you know, because you don't have to have a reason to bring Will Hobbs into your
right
into your faction. Everybody knows why Will Hobbs is there.
Hey, Will Hobbs, we're gonna go break stuff. You want to come?
Yeah.
Yep. We're gonna go hurt some people. You want to come? Yes, I do. Most certainly do.
You had a lot more storytelling in yours than mine.
I'm a storyteller. That's what I do. It's what I do.
I was there. I was transported.
You know, and then I love your idea of having one faction win every piece of gold. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like I saw a post that was, and it was obviously making fun of them, but you know, it showed Roman Reigns and the Usos, and like Roman had the WWE Championship, the Universal Title, the NXT Title, the North American Title, and the Usos had both the SmackDown and Raw Tag Team Titles and the NXT Tag Titles, and then the Women's Tag Titles, and one of them had, you know, the Intercontinental Title, and it's like everybody was like, oh yeah, because this is what they're doing. It's like
Paul Heyman's wearing the 24/7 Championship.
Yeah, it's like why would that be a bad thing?
That would be dope.
Like why can't we have like one faction just win everything, and then there's an entire pay-per-view devoted just to fighting those guys, mm-hmm. and they're in every single match, and it's...
And we've had factions that have done that. Undisputed Era was one in NXT.
You forget NXT did that, yeah.
They all had the titles. Evolution did do that. I don't know if every one of them had the titles, but at one point, at least three of them are holding a title. D-Generation X did that. With at one point they had the World Championship, they had the European Championship, the Tag Championships, and the Women's Championship.
Yeah,
I mean that is a beautiful thing when those things come together, and so I'm not hating this whole Bloodline collecting all the belts thing, because you know that's what's going to happen at Backlash.
And it makes their fall, which eventually is going to happen,
fall.
Look amazing, and you can put, you know, if Cody Rhodes beats Roman Reigns, I mean, not that Cody Rhodes needs the push, but he's going to get it.
Oh, my gosh.
The pop for Cody Rhodes, and then Cody Rhodes is set. I mean, he's...
Honestly, of all the people in WWE right now, that's who I want to be the one to take down Roman
Reigns.
He's
doing great, isn't he?
It's going to be fantastic. And I'm sorry. We won't get on a whole different Cody Rhodes thing. I'm just really liking his character.
I mean, we can.
Really liking this character. I'm really liking the kind of humility at the same time as the determination of what he wants to do coming through in his promos.
Yeah.
It's
this doing it for Dusty thing is really...
And gosh dang it, WWE. You have to make it happen, okay? You can't let him come out and say that's the one thing that his dad never got to do, and he wants to do it. Tell that whole heartbreaking story about how, you know, it didn't count. He wasn't really the champion or whatever the one time he saw the picture of his dad holding it, and then not put the belt on Cody Rhodes at some point. You got to make it happen.
You got to do it. Got to do it.
Please.
Well, those are our favorite... Our factions, I think they're pretty formidable teams.
Absolutely.
You know, I'd be excited. WWE, AEW, make it happen. AEW, mine seems more likely to happen.
Yes.
Because AEW will hire New Japan guys, and they'll hire Bully Ray. And I don't know if Bully Ray would go work for AEW, though. I don't think he has real high thoughts about them. But
you don't think so?
No, I don't think so. But I don't think Bully Ray likes anybody.
He's a bully, of course.
He's a bully. Yeah,
that's what they do.
Bubba the Bully Ray. When we come back, we're going to be talking more factions, so keep it here.
This week in Nerd History, the hunt for Nessie.
Nerd History.
In
1933, George Spicer went for a drive with his wife through the Scottish Highlands. The couple saw a large, unfamiliar creature pass in front of their car and disappear into nearby Loch Ness. They later described the creature as having a huge body with no limbs and a long neck. A few weeks later, a motorcyclist made similar claims, describing a prehistoric marine creature with four large fins and a long neck. These reported sightings sparked excitement among the general public and drew many more visitors to the lake, hoping to catch a sight of what would soon be dubbed the Loch Ness Monster. But was it real? In November of that year, the first piece of photographic evidence emerged, a blurry, streaked photo that kind of appeared to show the shape of a long-necked animal in the water. However, many people also said it looked more like a dog with a big stick in its mouth. However, a few months later, on April 21st, 1934, the Daily Mail published what is arguably the most famous picture of the monster. Known as the Surgeon's Photograph, the photo was reportedly made by a doctor named Robert Kenneth Wilson. The photograph depicts the trademark long neck of Nessie emerging from rippling water. For decades, believers and critics debated the authenticity of this photograph with a myriad of theories about its subject. This photo and the tales behind it brought hundreds to Loch Ness that year, thousands more in the years to come. In fact, even to this day, Nessie fans come in hopes to spot the elusive creature. Of course, there's a reason why no one has gotten another photo. Because even this one was suspect when you really saw the whole thing. The Daily Mail cropped the photo for publication, but the full photo greatly reduces the size appearance compared to the water, to where it seems that it's only a couple feet long. In 1994, Christopher Sperling verified the photograph was a hoax by admitting his involvement in its production. Sperling was the stepson of Marmaduke Wetherill, a famed big game hunter who had been hired in 1933 by the Daily Mail to find the Loch Ness Monster. After getting caught in a hoax faking giant footprints, Wetherill, hoping to restore his credibility, enlisted Sperling's help to create a model of the monster's neck and place it on a toy submarine. Robert Kenneth Wilson was chosen to give the photograph to the media because of his trusted reputation as a doctor. Though the photo is not proof of a monster in Loch Ness, it does stand as an important part of photo history and serves as a reminder of photography's fickle relationship with the truth. I'm Radio Matt. See you next time for more Nerd History.
Welcome back to the Two Words Podcast, where our two words today is group project. That's right, we're talking about factions. The best factions, the worst factions, and who has too many or too little of them. And, you know, factions always seem to really... they can really make or break. Mm-hmm. And if you do them right, they can really make people. But if you do them wrong, you almost somehow can bury four pieces of talent at one time.
And likely get a couple of them fired.
Yeah, I mean,
because someone's got to be blamed for it.
Yeah, and usually it's like all four of them, and somehow, you know, I think a big part of the problem, especially in WWE, is that they just immediately bury people that they put together.
Yeah, they don't. They make a big deal about these factions coming together, and then they don't push them correctly, and then when they're not received correctly because of that, they blame the faction as a whole. Like, nope, this was a bad idea. These people don't work too well together.
Yeah.
Let's break up the Hurt Business for no reason and then put them back together a few months later and then break them up again for no reason.
Yeah. And, you know, in looking at my list of best and worst, you know, two of the worst factions wasn't even really their fault because I have the League of Nations.
I also have them on here.
Yeah. Yeah. League of Nations was awful, but it shouldn't have been.
Right.
League of Nations was a group of talent, of monster talent.
Every single one of them, absolutely.
But almost immediately they were mid-carded, or they became the jokes of, you know, the butts of the segments or whatever.
Yeah, I think Sheamus had the world title for a hot second.
I think literally like a week.
And then they were mid-carded after that, which is a big bummer. But it did really feel like, well, we don't know what to do with all these characters. And they all have accents, so
yeah.
Let's make up a team.
Let's
anti-American team. That's what it was.
That's really what it is. But, like, you had, you know, you had Rusev, and you had
Wade Barrett.
Wade Barrett and
who Sheamus. And who's the fourth one?
Fourth. Or who's the fourth?
Wow.
Alberto Del Rio.
Oh, that's right. Alberto Del Rio. I forgot about it.
Alberto Del Rio was the least talented person. Well, I don't know about that, but he was the least likable person in that group. But still.
All of them were great.
Yeah, all of them were great. The social act casts, I think, was the same thing.
I got that on here, too, yeah.
You know, Heath Slater and Adam Rose and Curtis Axel, who Curtis Axel may actually be taking a producer spot with WWE. He had a producer tryout.
Oh, okay.
One of his segments. I'll have to go rewatch that segment, but it could be exciting.
Felt like kind of a knockoff of 3MB. I think it was too close to 3MB.
It might have been.
And people like 3MB, or at least like, we like 3MB.
Yeah, I like 3MB. You know, but it was like they put them together, and it was immediately like, "Hey, how stupid are these guys?"
Yeah,
Bo
Lee.
You know, like yeah, you put Bo Dallas, and at that time you put Bo Dallas in anything, and it's gonna be rough. Another one of my least favorites, the Mean Street Posse.
Yeah, I got them on here
like,
too.
Who We're watched the Mean Street Posse and was like, "This was a good idea. This is Attitude Era at its best."
They had some comedic value, but like the original two guys had zero wrestling training at all. The third guy they eventually brought in, Joey or whatever his name was, it was a wrestler, but this caused them to be reckless, and they actually caused a few injuries, too, because they didn't know what they were doing. Yeah. Didn't even know how to pull punches.
No.
So people and didn't want to work with them.
And
that's why they were pretty much relegated to hardcore matches, which is essentially 24/7 championship matches.
Which is hilarious that guys, that group of guys and those characters of guys were like, oh, we put them in hardcore matches. That's what we're going to do. Probably the worst faction of all time, the Dungeon of Doom.
Okay.
I mean, just they had one goal and it was to destroy Hulk Hogan and they failed miserably. it was Kevin Sullivan at his absolute worst booking. One of them was dressed like a shark, right? It was...
I forgot. Oh gosh,
it was all the worst. The guys in the worst shape.
Yeah,
like none of them were in very good shape. And they're you know, and then they were trying to do like the cinematic stuff with like you know Hulk Hogan in a cave and he's you know being kidnapped or whatever. Like yeah, it was some. What's going on, brother?
What's with all this smoke, brother?
Dude. Also, when they tried to reboot, you know, sometimes you have a great tag team or great group like the Legion of Doom that turns into a bad group like the Legion of Doom 2000, where they wore welder's masks and they added Draws and Sonny.
And then they had that terrible alcoholism, suicide gimmick.
That turned into real life. So
awful.
That's a thing. And I have one faction that I say is on my worst, but I don't think it's their fault. The Butcher, the Blade, and the Bunny. I like these three wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
I like the look they have. I like everything about them. I just don't like that they're on this same show as the Dark Order.
Yeah. I agree.
And that they get almost no, like, I love the idea of, like, them being mercenaries and kind of hitmen, you know, like, MJF's kind of not really lackeys, but, like, the guy, you know, working for him and that sort of stuff. I just think it's a little too close to Dark Order. And, like, Dark Order steals the show.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Do you have any other just terrible factions?
I got a few more here. X Factor. This was X-Pac's new stable after DX finally disintegrated, where he joined up with Albert and Justin Credible.
I think the article I read was, what if I told you that Jeff Hardy once got beat up by Justin Credible and Prince Al for Albert? Like,
any faction Albert was in was awful. Any tag team, anything, and any of his variations as well. What was the latest one?
Tensai,
yeah. That was weird.
The Super Shredder?
Always been weird. I got the Job Squad. I think the idea was great, like mid-undercarders joining forces, but it showed you how unnecessary it was when they finally let Al Snow and Bob Holly off the leash, because they became like the draws for the hardcore championship for a while. Like they were I wanted to watch their matches more than many of the main events back then. We got Cosmic Wasteland from Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes as Stardust the Ascension, which is the LOD ripoffs.
Gosh, I forgot they did that.
And they had one feud with Neville and Stephen Amell, Green Arrow. And then they were done.
I remember that.
And my last one is kind of a sad one. I don't remember what the name of the stable was called, but for a little while there was Cody Rhodes, Randy Orton, and some other guy.
Ted DiBiase Jr. in
Legacy, that's what it was. Legacy. Well, there was a similar faction in TNA called the Next Generation.
Okay.
This was Brian Lawler, Jerry the King Lawler's son.
Yeah.
Eric Watts, son of Bill Watts, and David Flair. The late David Flair, son of Ric Flair. This was a very, very similar. Oh, they all, yeah. Yeah.
Two of them are.
Two of them, you're right. I forgot. But anyway, this.
Oh,
this
that's was, not why it was sad?
That's not why it was sad.
Oh, man.
No, that's why it was sad. But
it's about to get really sad.
But the reason it was bad was because they brought out these characters banking on the names of their fathers. As the idea of the faction, and they had a fraction of the ability and the charisma, and it was the biggest nothing burger faction that was built up to be something huge.
Yeah.
In my memory.
Yeah. TNA had another one, Magnificent Seven. No, WCW had Magnificent Seven.
Okay. Yeah. I was about to say,
and it was like Sting and Scott. It was just a bunch of old dudes.
Yeah. There was the old age outlaws, you remember that? That
Vince Russo
put together in WCW as a real thing.
Yeah. That's
old age outlaws.
That's terrible. So as far as like best factions though, I mean there's almost too many to count.
Yeah, we've talked about quite a few, or at least a few of them here in the last several weeks with like NWO and DX. Yeah,
you know, NWO, though, what's funny is you could put them on the best and then also the worst.
Oh, absolutely.
Because there's basically two versions of the same faction.
But if you look at it as just those main three guys before it got super out of hand, like it changed wrestling forever. And
I mean, had they stayed at just the original three, added six.
That was his name, yeah. Xbox.
Xbox. I can't remember if it was six or six. They added six, and then there was one guy they added right after that.
I don't remember who.
If they had kept it at like a four or five man faction, it would have been really, really fun.
I agree. Yeah, if they'd kept it relatively small.
DX, I've loved. I genuinely actually love every version of DX, and I love Shawn Michaels. I mean, I'm just. That's my guy, you know. Are we just gonna? Does X-Pac make factions? Is that what? Is that what it is?
X-Pac is better in a team.
X-Pac is fantastic.
He's not great in a vacuum by himself.
But DX changed with the product.
It did, yeah.
Because like they would have never put the original DX on, you know, in the Universal era, as they call it.
Right.
And so they're like, okay, we'll just kind of change it up. Mm-hmm. I liked the Spirit Squad.
You like the Spirit Squad?
I like So it's one of those when you look at it from a perspective of like,
can't just come in here and say that.
You have to have a bad guy that is just unbelievably hateable.
Okay.
They nailed it.
Okay. I would agree with you in the fact that everyone hated them because they were supposed to.
Yeah.
Like they were the Miz of this situation. Like that you were supposed to not like them being on the screen. And so they did have that chemistry for that.
I think they did their job well.
I agree. I would agree with that. And we got Dolph Ziggler out of it.
Nikki!
I've got we already talked about Evolution. Evolution is on here, but you know, they represent dominance in my eyes. But I got the Inner Circle on here, the first big heel faction at AEW.
Yeah.
I think that was a great faction to start off the promotion with, because you automatically had established villains because of that. And of course, anything that Chris Jericho touches that way. That sounded inappropriate. Anyway, Chris Jericho is a part of like that is okay by me. Fine in my book.
Yeah. Gonna go to TNA.
Ooh.
Aces and Eights.
Okay.
Let's just talk about how Aces and Eights might be the best thing that ever happened in TNA. They had great chemistry. They were able to tell really good stories. Every member of Aces and Eights was really good. They were a biker gang without being like a weird biker. Like, they wore leather, but it wasn't like weird leather, you know? Like, they weren't all dressed like a village person.
They wore leather, but it wasn't, you know,
it wasn't
weird.
Like a weird leather, you know, like
a fun leather.
There was less rings and chains and such. Because, like I said, I really like everything that Bully Ray puts together.
Yeah, if I'm remembering correctly, it was like there were four guys in that, right? And two sets of them looked exactly the same. Like there were two bald guys with goatees and two long-haired guys with goatees.
I know that it was Bully and Devon.
Devon was in there too?
I think he was, wasn't he?
I don't remember. I might be thinking of a different group then.
You forget that it almost turned into like an NWA thing or NWO thing. Bully Ray, Garrett Bischoff, and Taz.
Oh, okay. I'm thinking of a completely different group. I apologize.
Devon and D'Lo were.
D'Lo?
D'Lo Brown was in there.
I didn't even know D'Lo was in there anymore.
Yeah, D'Lo Brown was in there.
I didn't even know D'Lo went to TNA.
Yep. Mr. Anderson was in.
Wow.
Tito Ortiz.
Okay, so it did become a big thing. I'm remembering that now.
Leva Bates, who you'll remember, became Blue Pants. That was fun. And on Wikipedia, there's just a guy named Mike.
Mike. All right. I got the Wyatt family. I really like.
Oh, man.
I really like cultish kind of factions of that nature. This one could have gone a lot farther. It had a lot of potential to keep going. I mean, I don't hate what they did with The Fiend and you know, the kind of Mr. Rogers Bray Wyatt character. I mean, I really, really liked that storyline. But I still hate that it was at the expense of Bray Wyatt and the Wyatt family.
Had it always been the plan to go back to the Wyatt family, I would not have hated The Fiend, and I don't hate The Fiend. To say I hated The Fiend was a bad thing to say, and they did horror really good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were the last ones that did like the weird and horror very well.
And this is the problem with the Wyatt family, why the Wyatt family, I think in my eyes, failed is because they kept booking them to lose. They kept booking them as this big overarching villain. And then by the time the pay-per-view came, they would always lose. I think the biggest waste of the Wyatt family and Bray Wyatt's character there was having him lose to The Undertaker. I thought that buildup of the new face of fear would be the perfect passing of the torch to who would become the new Undertaker, who would become the new face of fear. But instead, they didn't. Instead, they're like, let's just drill a nail in this coffin. A Bray Wyatt will never be the next Undertaker.
Yeah. I think that the biggest problem with the Wyatt family was realized when Brody Lee went to the Dark Order, because the Dark Order is on my list, because the Dark Order is, you know, in a company full of factions that have no purpose, as I've said before, in AEW, they are a step above everybody. And that's mostly because of Brody Lee's, whatever.
Legacy. I don't know.
Yeah, it's because of his
influence.
Because of his influence. Yeah, because of his because like of
he
what
wasn't,
he gave.
He wasn't. He didn't actually get to be in the faction for all that long.
No.
But for the time that he was in it, it did see a fundamental shift in how that stable performed. And I'm kind of mad at myself for not putting them on my list as well. But I'm glad you did.
But you can kind of see what the Wyatt family could have become.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's like, oh, you could have let that guy talk too?
Right.
Like, hillbillies that can talk like that? Are you kidding me? Let's go!
I've got the corporate ministry on here. I think that this kind of suffered from NWO syndrome in that it had way too many members. But it was awesome to see this weird, dark, spiritual, yet corporate entity in control of the WWE for a little while. Like, it was almost video game-esque, you know, where there's like this
the
secret corporation that's actually run by demons or, you know, something like that. Like, that it had that real kind of sci-fi-ish feel to it. I really liked that.
Yeah.
And I have one more.
Yeah, go ahead.
Can we do my last one?
Yeah,
my last one's the Bullet Club. I think also NWO syndrome, but the initial Bullet Club faction that kind of started with New Japan, but then became like this major, massive indie circuit hype factory. It was like creating a legend in real time. Like, I think you mentioned this before on the podcast, like people were buying the shirts at Hot Topic, had no idea who the people were, aren't even wrestling fans, but it became like this cultural phenomenon just by the fact that they were like, hey, we're going to do this without any of the big name brands. And that was kind of like the first seeds to building AEW, building the Elite, which I think was very poetic.
The thing that kept Bullet Club from becoming an NWO thing was that they didn't really add people until someone left.
That's true. It did so at least stay around like 10 or less.
Yeah, like Prince Fergus or Fergal or whatever they were calling him in New Japan, Finn Balor, he didn't take over until AJ Styles was gone from the company.
Correct.
And Jay White didn't really take over until somebody else was gone from the company.
Yeah.
So I think that they that's how they've avoided that. And last on my list, I don't think we can talk about factions without talking about the original faction, and that would be the Four Horsemen.
Love it.
I mean, and they set a blueprint. They set that evolution blueprint, kind of. You know, you had your super talent, and you had your great speaker in Ric Flair, and you had your heavies with Arn and Ole Anderson, and you know you had Tully Blanchard, and over the years, you know, there were different guys in there, but you know, you always look at every version of the Four Horsemen and you're like, that's a good group of dudes. Even when Dean Malenko and Perry Saturn was a horseman. The Rabid Wolverine we were just talking about.
Oh, the guy that must not be named. I can't think of his name automatically either. Chris Benoit.
There we go.
What a brain brick wall we had right there. I forgot that he was in that too.
So I loved that.
And I think one of the defining things about that too is that was long before our era. That was long before we started watching. I think maybe before you were even born when that was first established. Really close. Anyway, it's such a lasting concept because they've continued to tease, you know, groups of four teaming up as a Four Horsemen-esque thing. We've had that with, you know, the Four Horsewomen thing, which never really, you know, materialized, but was constantly teased. And there's several pictures of all four of them, you know, Charlotte Flair, Sasha Banks, Becky Lynch, and Bayley doing the four symbol. Like we had it with the Radicals, which had two of them that were in there, but that was also a kind of Four Horsemen-esque teased thing.
Yeah.
Like every era of factions where we get a team of four. They're always compared to the Four Horsemen.
Yeah.
And that is just as big of a legacy as anything left by NWO or DX or any of these newer, quote unquote, than any of the ones that followed.
Yeah.
So I absolutely agree they belong on that list.
Yeah. Well, those are our list of favorites and worst. Did we miss any? Do you think we left somebody off the list that should have been given the list? Well, head over to our socials at Two Words LTN. That's any social media you want to gripe at us on, and we are there. Head on over there and let us know what you think. We thank you for tuning in, and we will be back in a couple of weeks. Do we have anything else? We don't have any pay-per-views coming up, do we?
Not that we're watching. The next one we're watching is SummerSlam, so it's still a while away.
So we'll be there. Well, we are so glad that you joined us. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. How many more episodes we got?
Let's see. Two more for this season until we take our summer break.
Ooh, summer break. Summer vacation. Ooh, yeah.
I mean, let me make sure that. Hold on. So, yeah, the 21st, which is today. The 5th and the 19th. So, yeah. So, we'll be back on May 5th.
Super cool.
And then the last one for the season will be the 19th.
Dope. I am so excited for that, and we hope you guys are excited for that. So if, like I said, if you're not subscribed to all of our socials, just head on over to at @2WordsLTN. Click that like button, that subscribe button. Watch us on YouTube. Listen to us on Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, just kind of anywhere where you get your favorite podcasts. And we are there listening, hearing our sweet, sultry, audible chocolate. And like I said, we'll be back in a couple of weeks. But until then, my name is John, his name's Matt, and if you're not down with that, we got two words for you.